Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to Off-Grid Christianity, a weekly podcast for those who go or don't go to church and where we can meet and hear from those that have made their faith count. The podcast series is to encourage via conversation and not necessarily change your mind prior to listening. You can contact us as well by email ogc@accessradio.biz, business spelled B-I-Z. Please use this address as we now have a mailing list which will keep you informed of all the upcoming episodes and lots more. The address again is ogc@accessradio.biz. So please enjoy today's guest who has developed Into Playlands, a cardboard-based structure for a young person or adult to decorate, of which the aim is to represent areas of importance in their own life. It could be a desire or want. Into Playlands is having plenty of impact in schools, which helps pupils express themselves, especially if they suffer from ADHD and autism. Into Playlands can also help with people who suffer from dementia, for instance. Our guest was very instrumental in leading a previous Off-Grid Christianity guest to Christian faith more than a few years ago, which you can hear all about in episode 86. So, what does our guest remember of that time when she led this person to the Lord? How did our guest come up with Into Playlands? What is fabulous phonics that she developed at her primary school? How difficult is it to launch a product for schools to use? What are the pitfalls? All these questions gives me great pleasure to introduce Ruth Moyler. Ruth, thank you so much for joining us today. Where are we speaking to you from?
Highbrooms, which is Tunbridge Wells, Kent. I was in London for years and I came back again.
No doubt we'll hear more about this and what you did in London and Into Playlands and everything else in between in a few minutes' time. But first of all, we have to do the five questions. So if you're sitting down comfortably.
I am.
Here we go then. Question one, Ruth. If you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal, alive or dead, so that you could ask them questions, who would it be?
Well, I thought about this a long time and I've come up with Maya Angelou because I think she's amazing, amazing lady, very strong woman. She loved her food. She loved to dance. She loved to sing. She loved children. I think I could have a really good conversation with her. I came across her in the 80s watching Sesame Street with my children. I didn't know anything about her. So then I read her books and I was like, man, this is one amazing woman. Incredible. And her poetry was amazing as well.
What was her name?
Maya Angelou.
Never heard of her.
You need to Google her. Find out all about her. Yeah, amazing lady. Yeah.
So tell us more about her then.
Well, she's an African-American lady. She's probably the greatest Afro-American poet, first sort of black woman that was really raised. In fact, she wrote a poem for Bill Clinton's inauguration.
Oh, really?
She's very famous. So, yeah. I thought I didn't know about her because I didn't grow up with TV or anything as a child. But in actual fact, by the time in the 80s, she'd been a playwright, author, civil rights activist, film producer, dancer, loads of stuff. You know, I just found her so fascinating because she was confident and strong. And she also aged very well. I mean, she died 2014. But, you know, some people, they just get angry and stroppy when they're older. And she was just so wise and wonderful. So, yeah, she's worth researching.
How do you spell her first name?
M-A-Y-A. Maya Angelou.
Maya Angelou. Wow. I do apologise for not hearing about her, but as soon as you said the word poetry, that was it. God, I go into space saver mode on that one. Sorry, I can't cope with poetry. Unless it's written by Spike Milligan, but that's another story altogether.
Like funny ones, okay.
Wow, that's a very good guess. And you'll be pleased to know no one's ever chosen her before, so you can have a whole evening to her.
I'm proud, that's good.
And what meal would you cook her, by the way?
Yeah, she's a very good cook. In fact, she wrote a recipe book, so I'd have to think a very long and hard to get that right.
Well, maybe baked beans on toast with some cheese grated on top of it as a starter.
No. It's got to be really good.
Question two, who is your favourite biblical character or favourite biblical story or favourite parable, please, Ruth?
You see, that's hard, isn't it, to do just the one? Yeah, John's Gospel, I think, is amazing, profound, incredible, and I had an incredible secondary teacher that was really good at opening up the Bible and explaining. So that I've always loved John, the character of John. But I actually have chosen Samuel from the Old Testament.
Oh, really?
Because I just think it's so profound that a child, God spoke to a child like that. And I remember hearing that story as a child myself and wanting that, but also not being able to relate it to my personal situation at all because I grew up in strict brethren and women were silent and they sat behind the men. And I couldn't actually quite think that God would speak to me like that. But I wanted it. As years passed, I did hear his voice very strongly. But it's interesting, isn't it? It was like a seed in me. So I talk about Samuel to children when I have the chance, about them expecting God to speak to them. You know, they need to know that story. It's a good story.
That's a very, very good answer. Expect God to speak to you. That's great. Yeah. I like that. Thank you. Yes, we will hear more about what must have been like growing up in the Exclusive Brethren later on. Thank you. Question three, then, Ruth. If you were Prime Minister for the day and could change any law or impose a new law, what would it be?
Well, very tricky to only have the one day, I reckon.
Well, it sounds as if you need to be Prime Minister already. Go for it.
Well, there's quite a few things I'd like to sort out in education, I can tell you. But I thought, if I've just got the one day, I'll go for the one thing, which would be every petrol station has to have a toilet. They have to. No choice. It's just too upsetting. I'm showing my age now, aren't I?
Thank you. I do like slightly facetious answers. They are great. Thank you. Obviously, you'd have to embellish that point by saying they have to be kept clean every hour on the hour as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So my favourite petrol stations are the ones who tick those boxes. That's all I can say.
Can we go one step further then and say that you actually have to have two toilets, one for unisex, the other one for disabled?
Yes, definitely. I agree with that.
The reason I'm saying that is that I'm speaking here on behalf of people I do know. Is that, as you might be aware, if you're disabled, you need to go to the toilet really quickly. And the answer you normally get when you see able-bodied people coming out is like, oh, I'll only be a minute. I was only going to be a minute. Yes, but in that minute, that person has soiled themselves or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I fly the flag on that one.
I hear you. Okay, we agree
on that.
Is that
all right?
One. Yep.
Question four. Outside of family events, what has been your most enjoyable day out so far, please?
Well, I just had to come up with, at my school, which I loved in Peckham, South London, we used to do this annual trip where we took the whole school to the seaside. We all went in London buses and we went to Broadstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just amazing. It was just amazing. Loved it. I mean, over the years, we had to dumb it down a little bit because there was just too many people. It was harder to organise. So then we used to do the early years and then the Key Stage 1 and the Year 2. We used to divide it up because this was a school of 500 pupils. And if you offer to take parents as well, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Almost too much. But I want to tell you a little story of something that happened, actually, because I was kind of quite an undercover Christian at school because, you know, you can't talk freely about your faith as a Christian. But this is something that happened to me on that trip, which just, I'll never forget it. I was shopping. It was a very, very hot day. And I was shopping to get extra water in case the children were thirsty. And the idea was because I was commuting from Kent up to Peckham every day, which was mad, another story. So the idea was I would meet them and pitch camp sort of thing and meet them at Broadstairs. And as I'm walking around the supermarket with this water, I suddenly had a strong impression that I should buy some plastic bunting. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is a bit mad. Okay. And then I should get this shower curtain. I mean, this is really mad. This is really mad, but really happened. And then some ribbon sticks. So by now I'm like, okay, I'm really going out on a limb. I'm just feeling I should buy these things. I've got no idea why. I will pay for them myself. Obviously, the water is the school's paying for that, but I'm doing this. And the last thing was a bucket. So it's bunting, a shower curtain, ribbon sticks, and a bucket. But I thought, I don't know what this is about, but I will buy them and I'll take them with me. I don't know why. So when I got there to pitch camp, and my husband Chris was with me actually, we had a strong weight so we could put up this bunting. So I thought I had bunting sort of flapping around from various corners. Yeah, and I had everything else there. While we were waiting for the school to arrive, there was a school next to us because it's a well-used beach because it's got good toilets and ice creams and everything all there. And the children were just getting out their lunch. And suddenly, as they got their lunch, all these seagulls descended on them. And there were children screaming and, you know, people shouting, put your lunch away, put your lunch away. And it was awful, awful to see. And as I was watching that, I thought, oh, my goodness, I think I've got with me everything I need to stop the seagulls. So when our kids were sitting down, I said to the helpers, there were quite a few teaching assistants, right, take a ribbon stick, take a ribbon stick. And when the children open, we're going to just do the ribbon sticks over the top of them, and it will keep the seagulls away. And we had the flapping bunting. And then one of the, a male teaching assistant said, oh, if you don't want to do me, you don't want me to flap a ribbon stick. I was going, no, a shower curtain. I want it to be like a matador. And he did. And guess what? No seagulls. They all let them.
Really?
And I was just so emotional. I just thought, it so matters to God that those kids have a good day, some of whom had never seen the sea before.
Yeah.
That I was instructed what to take. Isn't that incredible? And then thinking, the bucket. What about the bucket?
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of tears about the fact that there was a lot of seaweed. So my husband spent the whole day going behind the seaweed, getting a big bucket of water, bringing it to them for their sandcastles.
Wow.
It was amazing. Yeah. So that really happened.
Please tell me you told the joke. You know, why did the beach blush?
No, I didn't think of that scene. I was too busy running around.
Because the seaweed.
Yeah, that's the one. We've got a bit of a thing going on now with toilets and we, haven't we? Never mind.
This will be a post-watershed version, this version, the way it's going.
Yeah, this is terrible.
As we discussed on our podcast called Christians Wrestling with Faith, that went out in the week of July the 4th for the general election. You know, if you hear that still small voice inside you, you know, it's fanning a flame, act on it, and there you go.
Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing experience. Amazing.
Brilliant. Thank you. And what's been your most embarrassing moment then? Please tell me it's about a toilet.
Nope. Oh. It's about a small space. I could tell you many. I've done many foolish things in my time. But this was while I was at uni with Tracy and other people. I was helping lead the Christian Fellowship with another great friend. And it was a bit over the top. There was a lot happening. I was trying to do my finals. I was engaged to be married.
Wow.
And not getting enough sleep. And, you know, there was stuff going on and people needed to talk. And I had a room, an upstairs room. And one day I was trying to do something and I looked out and I saw Jim coming. He wouldn't mind me telling you this. And I thought, oh no, what should I do? He's coming to see me. I know he's coming to see me. And I knew it would be a long time. So I got inside my wardrobe and I thought,
please tell me there was a light.
No,
you know,
it wasn't.
And snow the other side of the door.
It was just a very large wardrobe. College rooms have got very large wardrobes. So I got in the wardrobe, just assuming that he'd come in and think, oh, she's not there, and leave. But he decided to stay and wait. So he's sitting on the bed, and I can hear him kind of humming. And I'm in this wardrobe going, oh, no. How do I get out of this? So I think I took about 20 minutes.
No.
Because I really... And then I just had to say, Jim, before I came out. And then so I'm really sorry because we just laughed for a long time, but I couldn't. Yeah. How do you explain that one?
And you can't really, can you? Unless, of course, you said, well, you're not going to believe this, but C.S. Lewis was here just a few minutes ago. And he was telling me a story about this lion. And I had to go and look in the wardrobe and it wasn't there.
Oh, man, I'm not clever enough to do that. It was just one of those things.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you. Can you remember what you actually said to him, though?
It was just the shock on his face. It was just so funny. We just laughed. Yeah.
I was trying to get rid of you, so I hid in the wardrobe.
Got a lovely, lovely guy. He also met his wife while at college, and he ended up being a head teacher and an officer inspector and those are things.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, great
really?
Guy. Great guy.
Did he ever meet his wife, his future wife, in a wardrobe?
No. That's
no?
Story.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. Well, loads to talk about, and I do want to talk about Interplay Lands. I do also want to talk about Fabulous Phonics, because I need help on that for a start. But before we do, Exclusive Brethren, Ruth, you said you had a history of growing up in that. For those that don't know what Exclusive Brethren is, perhaps first of all you could tell us what Exclusive Brethren is, and your memories of it and what happened subsequently, please.
Exclusive Brethrenism is a cult, let's be clear about that, because basically their leaders' words are more important than the Bible. For my parents and many other people, they grew up in Exclusive Brethrenism and it very slowly changed and it became more and more strange. So in my childhood, it was becoming much tighter and you weren't allowed to eat with anyone that didn't belong to the Brethren. You weren't allowed to have tea, radio, go on holiday, none of the ordinary things that people would have. And I remember that the day they took the clocks out of the meeting room because they weren't meant to think about time. But we had four meetings a day on a Sunday, 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening. Yeah, intense. We weren't allowed to cut our hair, weren't allowed to wear trousers. And I had four sisters and a brother, and that was our entire life. But my dad, you know, he, incredible, really. He went through so much because his whole family was enmeshed in it all, and you married into it as well. You married inside it. He left. He had the courage to stand up and give a word about Jesus, speak about Jesus as being our leader, and he was asked to leave. And the people that had given him a ride to the meeting drove past him as he thumbed a lift on the way home. I mean, it's just incredible. Wow. I don't really want to talk about it too much because a lot of it's really sad.
Yes.
But he had to leave behind family members that would never speak to him again. And that's,
yes.
Yeah, and this it still goes on today. Still
yeah,
goes
yeah. On
today. So, yeah, it's just awful. But the amazing thing is that, you know, in our family, we are, as our mum and dad, we loved them very much, and we managed to stay together despite a lot of hassle. A lot of hassle, yes.
Can we fly the flag then for your dad briefly?
Yeah.
Because to be able to leave, take that step of faith, to leave for sake of his wife and children, that takes one heck of a lot of guts. So
that's incredible.
Whatever happened to your dad after that then?
Well, we had several years when we had meetings in our home.
Yeah.
And with dad and other dissidents that had left, because he didn't have courage to join the church. It was just like, no, they've done it so wrong. How could I ever trust anyone, you know?
Yes.
But eventually we did go to a small evangelical church, Vine Hall in Sevenoaks. And that was great because I had like a Christian youth group. Mm. And I met somebody there who, again, was incredible. He's my hero, Di Lewis, who was a Scripture Union missionary. He was so much fun. And an artist and a storyteller, and I'd never met anyone like that. And all of us girls and my brother were quite artistic, but that had been quite repressed because it wasn't really valued in the Brethren. It's like you'd be making too much of yourself.
Yes.
So it's all come out in later years. Yeah.
Wow. And your mum? What did she remember this time?
Oh, my mum was just incredible because she was very strong, and she used to get us to do things like, we weren't allowed to be bored. Why don't you go and press some flowers from the garden? Why don't you do? She was a country background lady.
Wow.
And so she had lots of ideas, and she was quite artistic. And we used to do things with her that my dad didn't know about because they had meetings every night, actually. There were meetings every night. Terrible, terrible regime.
What did your dad do for a living then?
He worked at County Hall. He could have been a doctor. He was a very intelligent man. And he was doing evening classes, but the Brethren stopped that. Yeah, because he had to go to these meetings. There was another lady that was an opera singer that was stopped. You know, incredible. You wouldn't believe the amount of suffering behind closed doors those people went through. Yeah.
We could throw Bible verse after Bible verse and then throw Bible verse after Bible verse back at us, and then we go, oh, come on, really?
No, it's just, yeah.
Well, you know, your dad, I'm just thinking he would be one of the original off-grid Christians, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
The podcast, it's the title of Greek Christianity.
Yeah, yeah. He was very brave, my dad. You see, what I was very fortunate because he came out when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
And so my secondary school life had got nothing to do with Brethren. And I had got, I could kind of reinvented myself. I was very fortunate to go to the grammar school in Tunbridge. So I came on the train every day from Sevenoaks. And I had kind of freedom, you know, it was amazing. I remember that there was a school teacher. She couldn't make me out because she was the RE teacher. And I was very, very suspicious of her because she gave alternative explanations of why the Red Sea, the Reed Sea, all these other things they have to teach. Of course, I was really suspicious because my thinking was very absolute, very straight. But over time, I got to know her, and she was a wonderful Christian, and she ran Girl Crusaders, that's right.
Used to
Girl Crusaders. But why I particularly love her, she went to my dad and told him that I had to wear trousers to go away on this climbing weekend. And I said I couldn't go because I wasn't allowed to wear trousers. Because although we'd left, all these things had, you know, carried on.
Yeah.
And she sussed it out. And she spoke directly to my dad and was really respectful and kind, but firm. So I got my first pair of jeans because of her.
I was actually going to ask you, what was it like to wear your first pair of jeans or first pair of trousers?
Oh, my goodness. I was so excited. And because I had it beyond before my sisters because of this special event, you see. So I was really like, wow, look at me. It's funny, isn't it, when you think back.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing that your dad took that step of faith. And, of course, your mum would have had to join, maybe cajole him, encourage him, whatever, because she'd be losing out as well, of course, with all her relations.
But we didn't know any different. The only people we mixed with were brethren. So really, when we were thrown out, as it were, what we experienced most was loss.
Yeah,
we've been part, exactly. You know, in and out of people's houses, part of this community. And now these people cross the other side of the road when they saw us. So yeah. that was terrible. My mum really suffered. She did.
Wow.
But we stuck together.
If this, what we've just shared, has provoked something inside a listener today who can identify with that, maybe they're going through it, would it be all right for them to contact you later on?
Yeah, I don't mind, actually. Yeah, I don't mind.
Thank you. Well, we'll give an email address or something like that later on, if that's okay, Ruth. Thank you very much indeed. Well, we didn't see that coming at the start. Quite often I say at the beginning of these podcasts that where I think we're going to go and where we end up is completely different. And so I thank you for your honesty there. And in some ways, it must have been good grounding for you, because you can see exactly why people leave the church, why people, you know, get screwed up over things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you go to university to start a new life, obviously to study, which, as you alluded to, other people weren't able to do that. What do you remember of your time there, and in particular, joining Christian Union and saying, oh, well, I was originally from the Exclusive Brethren, and now I'm with you guys.
Oh, and I never spoke about it, actually. I didn't.
Oh, really?
But it was too hard to explain. But something dramatic happened to me before uni. I failed one of my A-levels. In fact, it was because of my appalling handwriting.
Oh, wow.
Because I liked doing very loopy, gorgeous-looking calligraphy, but it's no good for writing fast. They couldn't believe I'd failed it, and so they asked for a remark, and it was because of my handwriting. So I always tell children that we've got to have good handwriting.
Wow.
But anyway, I had to stay to redo it. I had to stay back, and I redid it in the January and got through. That was fine. But what I did, I worked at an old people's home because I just wanted to leave home. I was just like, no, all my friends have gone. So I stayed away from home. At that time, my dad gave me a book to read, and I'm convinced he'd never read it because it was called Run, Baby, Run by...
Nikki Cruz.
Yeah, Nikki Cruz. And of course, it's a very violent tale of teenagers coming to faith. And, you know, I couldn't put it down. But right at the end, there's an account of how he received the baptism of the Holy Spirit, which I'd never heard of. I'd never heard of it in my life. And I read it and I thought, oh, I'd like some of that, you know. This sounds really amazing. I'd never heard of it. So, and being a good Christian girl, I thought I better just check this out. So I started reading the New Testament in Matthew to see where it spoke about asking for the Holy Spirit. And I only got as far as, I think it's Matthew 7, verse 9. It says, if the child asks for a stone, the father's not going to give him bread. And how much more will God give the Holy Spirit to anyone that asks? So I thought, oh, it's okay then. It's in the Bible. So I get down and I on my knees and I ask God to fill me with his Holy Spirit. And I have this amazing happening where I'm speaking in tongues, the room's full of light, the Bibles. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And it was really so powerful for me because, like I said about Samuel, I think in my inner self, I didn't really think that God would ever speak to me, a woman.
Yeah.
So I was very empowered by that. And also I thought, I've got a hotline to God. I can really hear God myself now. Whereas before, because my dad was quite, like all brethren men, very strong, this is what it is and this is what it says and this is how you should think. So I'd got a different experience. Now, of course, when I went back eventually and told him about this, he was really upset, very angry, in fact, tearful, and said, this is of the devil. You've been so deceived. And because many Christians from that era thought that the gifts of the Holy Spirit and healing and stuff. It was just for the disciples, you see. That's what they think. So they could not handle.
Yeah, it still exists. Cessationism is called, isn't it?
Just couldn't handle it at all. And then he had to let me go off to university. But the good thing about it, though, was that he couldn't blame anybody because nobody had coerced me. That was very important. And that, you know, I didn't say it was the book you gave me. That was the final thing, but that was true. Yeah, I literally had never heard of it before.
Wow.
So then when I went to university, it was an amazing moment because there were lots of young people and I met other people like myself and very fruitful time.
Yeah.
Very good.
And of course, for those that haven't heard the episode yet, if you go back just a few episodes to Tracy Williamson, she became a Christian through talking to somebody. Oh, wait a minute, you. So yeah. It'd be lovely to hear your side of the story as to what you remember that time.
Yeah.
And explain who Tracy was at that time as well, please.
Yeah, Tracy had come to do teacher training, but she was quite deaf. And when she'd had her interview, it had been in a quiet room and no one realised quite how deaf she was. And so when it came to the lectures, she needed a lot of help. We were all taking notes for her. And she went into quite a depression because she realised she wouldn't be able to teach. And, yeah, very difficult. But I wasn't the only person that spoke to her about God. She was interested in the Christian Union. She came a couple of times. And I remember having a conversation where I actually went in the garden with her because you had to talk so loudly. And I remember shouting in the garden. But there was quite a strong little band of us, and she came through to faith, and other people did too. Jim, who I mentioned earlier, and other people.
Yes, Wardrobe Jim, as we call him now.
Wardrobe Jim. Yeah, it was a really, really wonderful time from that respect, yeah. Friends for life.
Yeah, it's well worth having listened to Tracy's podcast as well, and what she does as a result of people like you being able to share the faith and not disowning them or anything else like that, just taking time. Yeah, because she's got a wonderful ministry, as you know now. So thank you for that. What's been interesting for me is obviously doing a bit of research as to who you are. And it's always great to be able to Google and for Dr. Google to put out your name and say, oh, yeah, look at this. 2007, there's an article about you, or maybe a bit later, actually. In The Guardian, no less.
Yeah.
Major respect. Major respect. It's not just like a one sentence or even one paragraph. It's a whole page of it, really, about what you were doing, because you'd obviously worked your way through primary school and everything else like that. Deputy head, Guardian turn up because they want to know more about two things. But the first thing I'd like to discuss, if that's right, fabulous phonics. What is fabulous phonics? Tell me more, please.
At that moment, it was a really big thing. Now it's all changed, but I can tell you the end of the story. But the beginning of the story was that in 2007, the government brought in a statutory expectation that we should teach learning to read by phonics, by the phonics method, using letters and sounds. And it was a bit of a shock. All of us teaching four-year-olds, we suddenly had to do this set way of learning, which no one had done before.
Give us an example, if that's all right, because it's a long time since I've been in primary school.
Yeah, if you haven't had children at that age. But they had to learn letters, four letters a week, not in the alphabetical order, in a different order.
Uh-huh.
And they had to learn about digraphs. And you see, what's a diagram? Two letters together that make one sound, like shh. S and H, and C and H. And this was all being taught when they were four.
Wow.
Which was really a big ask, I thought. So I remember going to the head teachers, because I had these wonderful inspirational duo heads. They worked together. And I said, look, I don't like this. It's just not fit for purpose. It's too difficult. Because I had just gone to a school that was, in fact, facing special measures. I'd gone from an outstanding school to a very tricky school because I wanted to change. I just wanted change. And I met these two amazing heads who were, they were called interim heads. They would go in and sort out school and then go to another school.
Right.
And I said, this phonics is not fit for purpose. We can't teach this. These children aren't speaking. They're coming to school late. You know, the parents aren't with us. What are we going to do? And the head teacher, Evelyn, she was so inspirational. She said, Ruth, just take all the best things you know about early years and do it your way and include the main points, but you haven't got to do it strictly as it's put in the book. Just say, why not just play with it, make it more fun. which was really wonderful that she allowed me to do that, because so many head teachers didn't do that. So I just thought to myself, well, what appeals to children? Toys and food. So I just based it on the five senses, and I had boxes for each letter of the alphabet. So in the S box, I'd have a snake and a Superman and just have different things. I would introduce one letter a day for 3 days a week. And on the Friday, we'd do some writing. And on the Monday, we'd revisit what we did the previous week, and on we went.
Yeah.
But the children were really into it. And of course, if you make learning very experiential, when it's hands-on and they're involved and using their senses, they're with you. They love it.
Absolutely.
So it went very well, and I called it Fabulous Phonics. But what's happened, and I spent 10 years developing all these teaching booklets and ways of working, and I've taught this method to many different people. And the songs, there's a couple of songs on Spotify that connect to it and everything else.
Wow.
But what happened was, a couple of years ago, the government brought in a new directive, which meant you could only teach phonics in a certain method if you included 9 other aspects, one of which was you had to produce books that went with each diagraph. At that point, I thought, I can't do it. I just can't do it. And I was at the end, I'd just been ill, I was at the end of my career. So I went to the head teachers and said, look, I think you're going to have one of the accredited ones, because there were 9 accredited ones. Can't be Fabulous Phonics. And it was sad. It was a sad moment. But during those 10 years, I'd become involved with Uganda. That's another whole thing. I teach teachers in Uganda how to teach English to their children. So basically, I've given the whole of Fabulous Phonics to Uganda. I've just been rejigging it to make it more culturally appropriate.
Wow.
And I'm doing 5-minute videos to go with each letter of the alphabet so I can get the pronunciation right and little songs. And
wow.
There's a Christian charity called Viva, and they work in many countries. I got to know the Viva people in Uganda, and I'm working with them, yeah. And I'm doing all that for free. It's like a gift to them, because they will be able to set this up and generate funds through it, as well as teaching teachers.
That's brilliant. That's in Uganda.
Yeah.
Viva Uganda.
Yes. Great fun.
Now, that's brilliant, though, that they're doing that in Uganda. So if I went over to Uganda now and walked into a primary school classroom, I might see Fabulous Phonics taking place.
No. You're jumping ahead, though. You're jumping ahead. So you could go to Kampala and to one of the schools run by Crane. This is like probably a 5-year project, you know.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Well, this is going to be good, because I'm going to ask you later on about how difficult is it to launch a product in the education world, especially obviously in schools. What are the pitfalls? You've already alluded to it so far with Fabulous Phonics. But then, hey, out of this comes the fact that you can't take it any further for legislation principles alone, as well as you want to retire as a result of it. And all of a sudden you get this flash of inspiration into Playlands. So tell me more, please, how that came about and what it is.
Well, that all kind of happened at the same time. You know, life is complex. In 2007, my eldest daughter, Beth, was at Brit School. As her final piece, she made this incredible wooden structure with 4 separate quadrants that all interconnected, and there were doorways, and there was a spiral staircase made out of drafts.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brit School, what is that?
Gosh, I'm not sure I can explain what that is, but it's for the arts.
Right.
And you go there when you're post 16. It's an alternative place to do A-levels, or you do your arts.
It's a bit like going to a FAME school, but for...
Yes, yes.
But for arts.
Well, Adele went there.
At the same time?
Yes, actually, but they didn't know each other.
Oh, so Adele wouldn't have written a song about her then. Okay.
But anyway, she came back with this incredible thing that she'd made. And when I saw it, I thought, oh my goodness, it's so complex and interesting. It's like all doorways, and that you could go from one into the other, one world into the other. So she had a pirate land and a fairy land and a homeland and a jungle. It was really, really great. I just loved it. And at that time, I'd just gone to that school that was very needy, and I kept saying, oh, Beth, I would love to take you. She called it Imagination Station. Can I take it into school? And eventually she said, oh, Mum, just have it. It's Mother's Day. Have it. Because if you're a true artist, you then go on to something else, don't you? So she wasn't really interested in making lots of them. She just said, have it.
Please tell me you got your lawyers to talk to her lawyers so yes. She can sign it over to you.
No, I have had her full permission. Anyway, so I took it into school and it had a dramatic effect on the children because they were just so transfixed by it all. Yeah. And so I linked it to my those little objects I'd have when I was teaching letters and made little stories and songs, and they were just totally into it all. And at the end of the day, they would put the right objects back in the box of that letter, you know, so and it all became like a thing. So after a while, and by the way, they were made of wood, not cardboard, they're wooden.
Hold on, I should just write an email to their researcher involved.
It's complicated, I know. But anyway, what happened was, over time, my husband, who's very good on carpentry and exact drawings, he's very good at all that. I'm the arty and I'll just slap something together, but he was probably. So he worked out how to cut it out, to intersect, to make,
yes,
like it could be a flat pack or a big one. And in fact, we made one for Uganda, because by then we were going to visit these friends in Uganda. And wow. The same thing happened. I arrived with this painted thing, which you can see on the website. It's hard to explain. And I couldn't speak English with these children. They couldn't speak to me. But I had thought about what they would play with. And I thought, yes, they will have the home. They'd have the market. They'd have the grasslands with the animals and Victoria, Lake Victoria, where they fish. So I had represented all of those things. And there were little people and objects. And straight away, they were fishing with these paperclip fishings and taking them to the market and taking them to the home. And I thought, yeah, this is play. It's so powerful. Yes. So much going on there. So we carried on making them because I was talking about Fabulous Phonics and how I used Interplay Lands. Other schools wanted them. So we wanted to kind of launch it. So someone in the family gave us some money to start off, and we had it a CAD program made so we could have these cut out properly.
Excuse my ignorance, what's a CAD program?
It's a computer representation of your drawing, which I couldn't do. Gotcha. We had to pay someone to do it. And then you can send these numbers to the laser cutters and they will cut out what you need, which is amazing. So we were at the stage of making big ones, and we were spending our summer holidays making big ones. By now, my husband is not that impressed. He's like, I don't want to keep doing this every summer. I'm like, oh, but... So, yeah, we were like that. And then I had this quite pushy parent at one of the schools who said, I want you to make one the right size for my family. I just want a family size one because I want it to be bespoke and it could be an heirloom. And she was really quite pushy. And in the end, I thought, let's do that. Let's do it. And I realized what was very interesting and helpful to many of the parents is that you can't actually buy little people that are the right skin color for you often, like Playmobil. Yes. It's all white, or you can get the African family on the Indian family. But I was using these little wooden peg people that I just painted so that they were the right color. And this particular lady, she was from India and her husband was from New Zealand. You know, their children were the gorgeous shades of brown. She couldn't have represented them properly. So I did do as she asked, and I made this thing for her, and she absolutely loved it. And one of the things I'd done was to reduce the photographs she gave me. So they actually went on the wall inside the Interplay Land. So it's like their family photo.
Ah.
And I painted the people to look like in the photo and da-da-da. So that went well. And I was thinking, oh, actually, this would be really good. And if we started producing these, I could work with families and then I could do it by myself because I needed Chris's help to do the great big ones, but I thought I could do this by myself. So we went down the road of getting it drawn up and the CAD drawings, but we hadn't done anything else. Then lockdown came. You know, isn't it amazing when you look back how things come together? So basically, the week we knew the schools were going to close, I said to the head teacher, different school by now, are the special needs children. We've got so many special needs children. There's no way they can be educated through a screen and they need something real. Yeah. I could do these. I have it in my hand. Will you pay me per child if we get these produced? And he took a risk, said yes. We phoned the factory and they said, right, we're closing on Friday. We could just about get this in. What size do you want? We said we want 9mm MDF. Oh, we've just got one sheet left. So basically, well, it's big sheets, but we had 20 cut. They delivered it. The guy delivered it to us. And I made 20 Interplay Lands for different children. But what was lovely, I worked with the speech therapist who usually would work with them one-on-one.
Yes.
And she found out the important details like their favourite colours, who was in their family, what they liked to eat, their interests, and told me these things with their permission, of course. And so we were able to make them really bespoke Interplay Lands and then delivered them in London. And then she had online sessions with the children, her speech therapy sessions, actually using the Interplay Lands. It was so cool.
Wow.
Yeah. It's never been written up, but I should have written that one up.
Oh, yeah. People need to have a look at the website, yeah. Of course. I will put it on the blurb at the front. If you take, for instance, the Celtic cross, it's the sun at the background, and then you have the cross in the middle. It's a bit like if you were looking as a bird's eye view, looking over it, that's what you're going to be seeing. But obviously, as you said, you've got a horizontal and a vertical piece of MDF going across it to make it into like four quadrants.
Mm.
And it's what you can then do in each quadrant by painting it. You've talked about the play people or whatever you call them, the minifigures as well.
They're called mini-me's.
Mini-me's. Yeah, good idea. Yeah.
What also happened during lockdown is that my friends in Uganda were in touch saying, Ruth, I've got all these teachers that can't work and we have no money, but we'd like to do something creative. Have you got any good ideas? And I went, yes! Because I suddenly was thinking about Interplay Lands because I was so into it by now, thinking, actually, we could do it out of cardboard because I knew they had good boxes. There was a link with cardboard. So you take a cardboard box, you cut off the corners and invert them, and you can make it into Playland. So it was really fun because I was basically making one here and sending videos, and they were making them in Uganda and telling stories, and yeah, really fun.
Wow. Now, your daughter, she called it one thing before passing it on to her lawyers to pass to you to have it. You then called it Interplay Lands. Why change the name to Interplay Lands?
Because Imagination Station is already taken. You know how it is. Yeah.
Ah.
You have to think of your own thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why.
We spent a long time. But the big thing about Interplay Lands, it's on a circle so groups of children can play. Because unlike a doll's house, it's only two children. But in a circle, you can have four or more children playing. And it needs to have the word play in it, and it needs to have the word lands in it. So we kind of put it together. But also, it's a very positive thing to be doing at this particular moment because our little ones, you know, they've been through lockdown. They have too many screens. The curriculum has narrowed. There's more autism in schools than there ever was before. And there's been some research to show there's some correlation between the rise of the narrow curriculum and the rise of autism. The children aren't having enough play.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it was something I wanted to discuss with you. What have you seen from the start of your career in the education to now your end of your career, but obviously the start of pushing to Playlands even further afield with regard to all things like autism, which, let's face it, when I was at school all those years ago, I don't think that word even existed really in the curriculum that we knew. So what have you seen?
Yes, it's nobody. The jury is out on why, I think. But, I think autism has always been with us. I remember individuals as I was growing up who I now look back and think, yes, they must have been on the spectrum. My own dear husband is on the spectrum. He'd be happy for me to tell you that. And one of my daughters, one of my grandchildren. Yes, there's a lot of it about. But the thing is, nowadays, it's kind of like magnified. Like it's a real thing. Whereas I think the teaching needs to be better. The teaching needs to be very multi-sensory, hands-on, inclusive, more exciting. Because if you think about where the children have come from, what they've been through, this terrible time where everybody got fearful and they couldn't go out and all of that.
Yeah.
And suddenly they go back into school and school is stricter because the schools are worried about catching up. The way to catch up is not to be stricter, is to kind of, you know, instead of going down on the children, is to open them up. I'll never forget that going back into school quite soon afterwards, after lockdown. The schools use a lot of interactive whiteboards now.
Yeah.
So these children are sitting there like zombies in front of this lesson. I was thinking, no, this isn't okay. So then I got my little objects and started telling a story, and they're like, so excited, just so excited, because it's moving and it's real, and you bring in their names and make it relevant, and that's what's needed. Also, lots of singing. Not enough schools are doing enough singing now. That was my main tool working with children. And I do a bit of supply teaching. I do once or twice a week just to keep my hand in. And I always sing with the children, always. They don't know me at all. I say, I'm Mrs. Magic Moila. And I sing the register with them, and they all join in and they do it. And, you know, you can do these things. But you have to take a lot of risks and be willing to get out there.
I made reference to this at the beginning, actually, because obviously ADHD and autism, as you said, it's always been around, but we weren't really aware of it and the prevalence of it now. But going back to Interplaylands, people with dementia, what have you seen with that, using Interplaylands?
Yeah, I'm at a very early stage at that, to be completely honest. My mum was in a care home locally, and I had just finished a flat pack one for Uganda. I took it in to show her and the other residences for interest, because it's something different, a lot of whom have dementia. And what happened was the way they reacted to it was like play. So they're picking up the person and doing little steps and going through a door and doing something. And I thought, oh my goodness, it hadn't occurred to me that that would be useful or helpful. So my mum herself didn't have dementia really, but she was interested in it all. I spoke to the lady who arranges all the events and said, do you think it would work, you know, to make one for them? How do you think? So we talked carefully about what areas we should involve. We came up with a big sitting room, a restaurant, because food is very important, and a garden and the seaside. And the seaside's like a 1950s sort of seaside. And the top level is heaven. Now, one of the ladies who was more alert, she was quite offended at the thought that I would represent heaven, like it was irreverent because, you know, old school. But I have done it. It's gold, and it's got lights you turn on, nothing else much. They can make of it what they will. But what happened when my mum was in her last days, she died in November. My sisters and I, we were gathering a lot at the care home, and you have a lot of time and you're not sure what to do with yourself. So we started making it then. One of my sisters is a sculptor. She made this beautiful tree out of willow that's in the garden. Two others are painters, you know, just doing it. It was very therapeutic for us to do it, basically. And we made about 30 characters that were all grey-haired or white-haired in old-style clothing. But we didn't make them specific. The way I think we'll do it is they will choose one that looks a bit like you.
Yeah.
And where would you like to go? What I'm trying to start, but we are at an early stage, is you will sit with four residents and give them opportunity to make choices in their own section. So in the restaurant section, they can choose where they're going to sit, who they'd like to sit with them. And there's little bamboo rings that you place the people in so they don't fall over. Because if you're shaky, that wouldn't work.
Yes.
Also for young children, you see, that same for them. They knock things over. It's upsetting. And if they will stay there, that's good. And then there's glued on lids, because I use a lot of recycled stuff, that are the plates. So then they can choose food to put in the plates. And we realised they would need to have something they could eat, actually. So we'll have Cheerios or, you know, those ice gems.
Yes. Yeah, brilliant idea.
Yeah. And then there's a doorway. And you come out into a beach hut and you're on the beach. I love that. That is a bit C.S. Lewis, you see. I do love C.S. Lewis. So on the beach, there's some mini deck chairs, which I managed to get off the internet. And there's an ice cream station. And there's a boat made out of a sardine tin. You know, you can have fun. And wow. The next one is the gun. So, yeah, it's all cool. It's all cool.
Well, I tell you what, I want you now to make me a C.S. Lewis Interplaylands. We can have your bedroom, right, with the gym wardrobe.
Yeah.
And then, so you can decorate the bedroom whichever way you want it. with that wardrobe.
Yeah.
And then you go through the wardrobe and guess where you come out into? Narnia.
Yeah.
So you can make your Narnia station. And then obviously the next door could be something else. And the next door after that could be something else to bring it back to the bedroom again.
Now be careful, Martin. Is this a commission? I'm asking you. What's going on here? Am I making it out of cardboard or wood?
Oh, you can do it. As long as it's free, I don't mind.
Cardboard.
Ice cubes to represent Narnia. Oh, that is fantastic. On a serious note, though, you know, there's so much scope here, you know, from Bible points of view as well.
Oh, yes, I've started to do it for churches. Yep. I've got a keen lady who would like me to make one for her church. So I'm going for four different scenes. So we're trying to do like by the Sea of Galilee and by on the hillside and all the rest of it. And you can have an upstairs and a downstairs. So we could have Old Testament, New Testament, not sure about that. Or it might just be heaven.
Yeah.
But then I want to represent Jesus and the disciples, but also the children themselves, so they can go into the story. So like, what do you want to say to Jesus? You know what I mean? You can make it as hands-on as you like.
Not only that, you can do DIY kits, you know, like the Airfix models back in the 70s, which we all bought and I was rubbish at gluing together, let alone painting. But you could just give us the basic kit, say the basic paints, and we can paint it ourselves, can we?
Exactly. That's what I want to do. On my website, you can buy your own blank kit and I'll post it to you.
Wonderful.
Or you can do the cardboard version. And if you look up Mrs. Magic Moiler, I'll show you how to do it. Cardboard.
Wow.
So yeah, so I'm beginning to do more like workshop events with the recyclables, because that's a big thing nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
People don't have much money, but they want to reuse. So I'm doing a few events like that now.
When are you going to go on Dragon's Den then?
No, I'm it's not for me, because way back I did think about going in a big way, but the thing is, the people's ideas are about reproducing the same, and the whole point of this is, so it's yourself, make it bespoke to yourself.
It is, but if it's helping the wider community, especially the primary school people, especially those who are on the spectrum and you can see their faces suddenly light up, let's get it out there.
I would love to, but I'm 62. I kind of want some people around me. I'd love to pass it on, basically.
Yeah, but you're recycled 62, whatever the expression
yes,
is.
Yes, I am recycled 62. That's funny.
Yeah, you're a recycled teenager, you know. Going back then to the very beginning, when we talked about you growing up in the Exclusive Brethren, and seeing your journey, before we get to the final question, obviously to find out who Christian Hero is, which you've already alluded to, what have you learnt so far in part one of your life with Interplay Lands, everything that's going on, that if people are listening who are like really struggling at the moment, here's your 2 minutes worth to impart what you've learnt, and we can go, wow, thank you for sharing that, Ruth. What would you say?
I would say that God, Jesus, wants to talk to us way more than we imagine. And that the amount of times little things have happened with precise detail that matter to me, or when I'm making something for someone else, I've found exact things that mean something to them. You cannot get away from the fact that we are individuals and we matter to him so much. And he knows our names. He knows who we are.
Mm.
At the moment, I've been developing this thing of... I can draw cartoons quite quickly now. So if I go into a shop for a coffee, I'll quite often draw somebody and give it to them. And sometimes people cry because of this thing about it being an individual gift to them. Now, I would love to get to the stage where, you know, I've got something divine to say to them, you know, or a specific Bible verse. Very occasionally that happens. But just last week I was at a cafe and I noticed the lady had shells around her neck. And I thought, oh, just for fun, I'll draw her a picture while I have my coffee, because she was very kind. And I drew a picture of her as a mermaid with, you know, really big shells around her neck. And behind the serving coffee, but there's this great big mermaid tail coming out the corner. And I took it over to her to say thank you and to pay at the end. And she cried. And I thought she was going to laugh, but she cried because it touched her. And I thought, why did it touch her? I think it's because I wrote on it, she works in the cafe, but really she's a mermaid. I could tell by the shells, or something like that's what I wrote.
Yeah.
It's about significance. Everyone needs to know that they're significant. And most of the time, the society we're in, the schools that we're in, you feel more like a droid. You just have to fit in. But to God, we are individuals and we matter. I think that's my message. Yeah,
that's brilliant. And it's just as well I wasn't with you that cup of coffee in the shop, because I said, you've got to add on to that, and you're not selfish, you're a shellfish.
You see,
Humour is your thing, isn't it?
Well, some people don't call it humour. I do get weird looks a lot of times. And of course, then I have to explain my so-called witticism, which makes it even worse when you have to explain something. So I think you need to go and push this further. I really do.
Well, if anybody listening, you know, would love to get in touch and help me. I need help, really, because I'm only one person. But I have a workshop.
Yeah. In Kent?
In Kent.
Can you make a nice cup of tea?
I make a lovely cup of tea.
Well, there you go. So for those that want to help out on Interplay Lands, because I just really feel this needs to get out there into all the primary schools.
I agree.
It really does. And it needs somebody from Dragon's Den, that sort of person, to say, I will put you £2 million straight away for personal use and £5 million for this and whatever they talk about, to get it out there, because it is just phenomenal. We know what people are saying these days about kids with mobile phones and that losing out. And yet you put them in front of this and they are playing.
Because they're using their hands. They get on with it, yeah.
Just on the advert, 30, 40 years ago of a Sony Trinitron TV, I think it was, all it was the box with kids playing in it. And the punchline was, and there's a free TV for the adults. Do you remember that? I think it was Sony Trinitron. If not, I do apologise to other TV makers out there. But it's the same sort of thing. There's so much here.
Yeah.
And for those that have been touched by what you shared regarding Excuses Brethren, for those who might be teachers today, those that might be an entrepreneur, how can they get a hold of you, please?
Well, can you put it at the end? At my email. My email is the best way, really. And also, you can put my website at the end, yeah?
I can. Yeah. But you can say it as well, the website address, because it always sounds good if the person says it.
www.interplaylands.com.
Well, Ruth, what a time this has been. One final question, please. And that is, Ruth Moylor, who is your Christian hero, please?
Well, there was no contest here, actually. My Christian hero, it was definitely Dai Lewis. It's spelled D-A-I, Welshman, wonderful man.
Mm.
And he was a Scripture Union children's missionary. And he happened to attend the church that we eventually went to after we left the Brethren. I was just amazed by him because he used to use flannel graphs. Do you know what I mean? Flannel. He'd tell the Bible story and he'd be putting up different coloured felt.
Yeah, fuzzy felt. Yeah.
And he was a painter. So first of all, that was incredible. I was like spellbound.
Did he do the boxes that were blank and then you just draw lines and it would spell a word? Did he do that?
No, he didn't do that. It was all felt and overlays. So he changed the scene. Very, very clever man.
Wow.
He also wrote children's books and he illustrated them himself. But the most incredible thing for me was he ran camps, long barn camps, and I got to go. I was too young to attend as one of the kids. I went as a helper, and they had this understanding that you had to pay your way, you didn't go for free. And I went to one and absolutely loved it. I was about 15. And they would run every week in the summer. I'm sorry, for a month in the summer. And I remember being desperate to go back. And my mum said, we just haven't got the money. You can't just go for however long you think you want to go. So I prayed. And this was the first ever miracle. Again, it was God so affirming to me. I prayed for money. I think it was the first thing I really, really wanted badly. Instead of receiving enough for 1 week, I received enough for 3 weeks from somebody who was out of the blue.
Wow.
A friend of my sister, who she was nursing, used to come to our home, and she used to put aside a tithe of money to give to need, and just suddenly felt she could just send it to me. I mean, incredible.
Yeah.
So I went for 3 weeks. I absolutely loved it. Now, these camps, they were run in the middle of a wood. Dai Lewis had bought this piece of woodland. And they were, what do you call those? The bell tents.
That's it.
And they had their, you know, the toilet for the boys, the toilet for the girls, back to the toilets again. And they were cooked. His wife was an amazing cook. They had like a cookhouse where we ate the meals there. And they did crafts, which I got very involved in. They did wide games running through the woods. And then in the morning, they would have little group prayers together with the officers who were all Christians. And then in the evening, he would tell a Bible story and tell also a chapter of one of his books. And then we'd have campfire and singing. I mean, it was just wonderful. So I was able to send my own children there, which was lovely. And they talk about how much they loved it. And I think that's really why I decided I wanted to become a teacher.
And he really encouraged me with my art. That was the other thing, because I didn't know that you could be like a Christian artist. I know that sounds weird, but from my background, that's how it was. So he really encouraged me, and with the writing. And very sadly, he had a stroke at the end of his life, and I went to see him and we couldn't converse. And I never got to tell him all these things I wanted to say. And when it was his funeral, I couldn't go. There was a wedding on the same day, which is just so tragic. So I thought, I have to talk about him, because apart from all his talents, he was such a funny man. He was very, very funny. We would always be laughing all the time.
Wow.
Great sense of humour. Great, great man. Yeah.
I love it when we fly the flag for the Christian hero that most people would never have heard of. So Di Lewis, brilliant. What else do we know about him? What did he do for work, for instance?
Well, he was a full-time Christian Union missionary. That was his work. So he went around churches. He was based in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in Ivy Hatch. He lived. When he did these camps, all his children were there too. So the camps have carried on, actually. I think they still carry on now.
Wonderful. Ruth Moyler, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been brilliant. I really do hope that there have been people listening to this podcast thinking, I want to know more about Interplay Lands. And then when they've seen just how brilliant it is, what they can do with it, they'll be contacting you. And in a year's time, we'll be able to do a podcast. And you say, well, I can't speak to you at the moment, Martin. I'm flying over to Los Angeles. Ciao. Ruth Moyler, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. All the best. Bye-bye, Martin.
For more information on Interplay Lands for parents, families and primary school teachers regarding inset training and creative workshop events, please go to www.interplaylands.com. In the next episode of Off-Grid Christianity,
we're doing two things. We're getting you out of your environment. We're putting you in an environment where beauty can heal from all of the noise and abrasiveness of the world. And I guess it's three things. And we're opening ourselves up to listen. And you basically are like, so what's going on?
Yeah.
Tell me your story. Tell me the story of the last 6 months or the last year. And you don't get a lot accomplished that way, because you find out people can talk for hours when it's about themselves. They have a lot to share.
Yeah.
And you realize. And then, you know, I always ask them, I always say, okay, so who is it on a daily? All right, let's not go daily. Who is it on a weekly basis? Who is it on a consistent basis that you tell all this? You know, who do you dump on? And they'll look at you. They'll think. Sometimes they don't even have to think, but 99 times out of 100, they come back and they say, I don't have anybody like that.
Yeah.
And that's what breaks my heart.
So please join me and special guest Derek Steele in the next episode of Off-Grid Christianity. Cheerio.